Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. On January 29, 1863, hundreds of Shoshone Indians perished at the hands of the U.S. Army at the Bear River Massacre site in southern Idaho. In our next conversation, we're going to visit a memorial here in Idaho, and Darren Perry, author of The Bear River Massacre, tells us how this can be a model for police. Believe it or not, many of the Indians who survived the massacre joined the LDS Church just a few short years later and were actually baptized in the very Bear River where many of their family perished. It's an amazing conversation, and we'll visit this memorial site. And oh, by the way, if you want to see the entire interview uncut without any interruptions, sign up at youtube.com/gospeltangents or gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for just $8 a month, you can sign up to be in our special Facebook group or on YouTube, whichever you'd prefer, and you can see the entire interview uncut. It's great because we're in our next episode after this one, we're going to visit the actual massacre site. But now, here we are at the state site here in southern Idaho. Check out our conversation.
Yeah, that next kiosk just begins to tell the story about Connor and the California Volunteers and how they got here and how they signed up to fight in the Civil War and never was realized. They were never allowed to fight in the Civil War. And so it made an easy decision for men who signed up to fight and kill when they heard about an Indian problem not very far from Salt Lake City. It made it a very easy decision for those men to really work on Connor to make sure that they could go and realize their dream of murder and killing. And it didn't matter if it was somebody from the South, the Southern states, or if it was a Native American. But Connor led the troops in that respect. So
I have a note here about heating up a bayonet. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, the army was, they were really looking for the chiefs. And then on the Daughters of Utah Pioneers Monument, one of the plaques says that Sagwitch was killed that day. And he wasn't. He was one of the survivors. But the only chief that lost his life that day was that of Bear Hunter. The army knew that he was one of the leaders. And they caught Bear Hunter alive. And they actually tortured him quite a bit and shot him and stabbed him. But he wouldn't die or even cry out for mercy. And so because of that, one of the military men became angry and stepped to a burning campfire and heated that bayonet on his rifle till it was glowing red. And then they ended up ramming that piece of hot metal through the chief's head from ear to ear.
Oh, my gosh.
And so Bear Hunter went to his grave a man of honor. He never cried out for mercy or made a sound. The natives thought that that would be a sign of cowardice. The ironic thing is Sagwitch lost his wife that day. She was murdered. And Sagwitch ends up marrying Bear Hunter's widow. In fact, the picture that we have of Sagwitch on the wall behind us here is Sagwitch and Bear Hunter's widow. And they were actually the first Indian couple to receive their endowment in the endowment house in Salt Lake. And they were the first Indian couple to be sealed as husband and wife by Wilford Woodruff in the endowment house.
Oh my goodness.
So that would have been wife number five for Sagwitch throughout his life. But it was Bear Hunter's widow.
Now, was that serial or parallel?
Both.
So he was a polygamist?
He was a polygamist early on. The Shoshones practiced polygamy, but very, very little. And they just practiced it out of if a man died and he left a family, out of sheer need to take care of that family. And so they actually did that as needed only. And only the providers that could provide well for their families was able to take on another family. If you were a poor provider for your own family, you weren't going to get another family to take care of. So Sagwitch, only at one time during his life did he have two wives.
Oh, okay.
But it was out of necessity for sure. Hmm.
Is that the same photo on the wall? Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same photo.
Okay, I'll have to get that photo, splice that in there.
Yeah.
Because I remember you said something about why, I can't remember why it was cut off.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure why we cut it off in this picture, other than we were talking about Sagwitch on one side and the army on the other side. But that was his wife that was actually cut out of the picture for that kiosk picture.
Okay.
That she was Bear Hunter's widow at that point when the troops attacked. And here on that kiosk, we just try to point out different areas of interest, where the lodges would have been located, where the troops first come to the bluff, which we call Connor's Overlook. That's on the other side of the valley, straight across there. And then where the attack took place. They attacked originally as one group, frontal assault. And that's where almost all of the 18 military soldiers died. It was that one frontal assault. After that, they pulled back, regrouped, and decided to flank the Shoshones. One group went one way around and from behind, and the other group went the other way. And they forced the Shoshones down to the river because it was winter time and the river was slightly frozen. And so they pinched them down to the river, and then that's where almost, you know, all of the killing took place.
Hmm. Now, so I know Porter Rockwell took Colonel Connor to the Shoshones, but you also said that, so Colonel Connor isn't a well-liked name among the Shoshones, but you also said that the Mormons hated him as well.
Yeah, they didn't like him as well. In fact, he was there to babysit the Mormons. He actually started the Salt Lake Tribune. So he started a contrary newspaper to the newspaper that was in the area at the time, just run by the church. And so that was a source of contention for the Mormons, because here was a Gentile newspaper of Mormon haters. Mm-hmm. And he owned it. And so... Connor's also known in Utah as the father of mining. In his spare time, he sent out a lot of his troops that were stationed there to prospect in the Salt Lake and Park City areas. Mm-hmm. So Connor was known as many things to many different groups of people, but liking the Mormons and getting along with them was not part of it. That was an adversarial relationship between the two.
Interesting. Oh, you also mentioned something about nits make lice.
Yeah, before Connor left, and that's, you know, earlier I spoke about Connor's intentions when he left Salt Lake City. They decided to, you know, he made the comment in the paper that nits make lice. I know that comment is known to Mormons, because that same comment was made back east.
Yeah, for the Hans Mill Massacre.
Yeah. So, but it was his intent to make sure no child was left to grow up to adulthood.
And so this is an Eagle project, as I remember.
You know, a year ago, a young man, I call him Kai Sorensen from Salt Lake City, 14-year-old young man, called me and said, I want to do my Eagle Scout project on... at the massacre site. I said, what do you have in mind? And he goes, well, I've had an idea to do a etching on a rock to honor the children that lost their life at Bear River that day. And so this was his idea. I said, it's a great idea. And he came up with the imagery, the cradle board, to talk about that. And he actually came up with the narration that's on the rock. And so the fact that a 14-year-old boy was had it in his mind that this is what he wanted to do for the children that lost their life that day really is an amazing, cool thing to me. And so,
well, and there's an interesting story about the cradle board that was hung in a tree.
Yeah. After the massacre, Sagwitz returned to the village. There was only one lodge left standing that hadn't been burned. And it was actually Sagwitz's lodge. But it looked like it was made out of net. There were so many bullet holes in it. They said that inside his lodge, his wife was dead, but he had a brand new infant daughter that was still alive. And the oral history goes that Sagwitz told those survivors that were with him to take that little girl, put her in a cradle board, and hang her in a nearby tree. And to me and you, that's brutal. That's like just signing the death warrant for this child. But he knew that without mother's milk and without a way to nurse that baby, that child had no way. He had no way to take care of that baby. And so he did that in hopes that a settler family would come through the next day and find this little girl. And that's what happened. The Hull family, William Hull, drove his sleigh to the massacre site the next morning. And actually in his journal wrote about all the atrocities that he'd seen. But part of what he did is he found this little girl hanging in a cradle board. He took that little girl home and raised her to an adult. And that little girl was known as Jane Hull throughout her life. And she ended up living to be about 90 years old, and actually she's buried in the Ogden area in the Hooper City Cemetery. She's got a wonderful headstone there. And she got married, had a family, but her name was Jane Hull Riley. That's who she ended up being.
And that was her English name.
Yeah, that was her English name, but it was Sagwitz's daughter.
Wow. Well, and it's just, I know there was another story you told which was horrible, and it kind of goes back to that nits make lice comment about the soldiers were running out of ammunition. Yeah. And so to save ammunition, what did they do?
Yeah, this is brutal. And we found this in a soldier's journal, that the decision was made halfway through the massacre that they were worried about running out of ammunition, because that's how many, you know, that's how much they had expired. So it was decided to kill the infants and the children, to grab them by their heels and to swing them around and bash their heads out on rocks or any hard surface that they could find. And so part of that testimony was given in Washington, D.C. by my grandmother, who made, you know, the National Park Service always called this area the Battle of Bear River, until she started testifying in front of Congress and showing these journals and telling the story about the atrocities. And because of her, that the whole site was renamed to reflect what it was, the Bear River Massacre. But it was because of her finding journals like these that she was able to change all of that. But yeah.
This was Jane Hull or somebody else?
No, this was my grandmother finding these journals.
Okay.
And testifying in Congress about the atrocities that these soldiers committed. Mm-hmm. And actually wrote about in their journal. And so...
So there's another reason to believe that it was more than 250.
Yeah, there's another reason. So, but yeah, that killing the babies by bashing their heads out on rocks is... that's hard for me to talk about. That's horrific.
And, yeah.
You know, it's really hard to hear. But people can do anything, I suppose, in the name of religion or sense of duty. I don't know.
Well, and I know that you said, you know, these events are tragic, but it's important that we move on. And I'm amazed, because you seem like you really have a forgiving heart.
I do, and I think I'm wired a little bit more like Sagwitz would have been. Sagwitz had witnessed the entire destruction of his people almost. But yet, 10 years later, he ends up joining the church of a group of people that probably caused it. And so, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that we live in a world that's not fair. we live in a world that things happen to people every day, bad things, at no fault of their own. And it's just important to me that I honor the story and I honor those people that died that day. I think they need a voice. Their voice has they have a God-given right to be heard, and their story needs to be told. But I think I would not serve the story of them well if I didn't tell the rest of the story. And that's one of forgiveness, and that's one of who I am today, how we can learn from tragic events and make this world a better place going forward. I could dwell on the negative part of this and be bitter and angry and hold people accountable and want that side of it. Or I can say, look, this is what happened. We need to recognize it and talk about it. But at the end of the day, that shouldn't define us. And that doesn't define who we are today. We've moved on. We've moved past. We will always remember. We will always forgive. But it doesn't mean we will need to forget. And so that's who we are. And I think that that story plays so much better, and especially in a world we live in today that's so divided, that I think there's lessons to be learned about how bad things can happen to people, but it shouldn't define them, and how we can all move forward together to make it a world, a better place.
I mean, I think this is great. You know, we have kind of the legacy of slavery, and one of the things we didn't talk about, I know we talked about with my interview with Thomas Murphy, talked about Indian slavery, which has, you know, black slavery gets a lot of talk about. But do you think that this can be a model for how we can talk about, you know, tough racial issues and tough things of the past?
Yeah. In fact, during my campaign, I tried to make that a big issue is this is exactly the playbook. And it's not because of me. There's other people that have been that laid this groundwork before me. But I think, you know, it's okay that we have differences of opinions in the world we live in today. It's okay not to agree on everything. But how we treat each other going forward needs to be better, needs to be more civil. We need to acknowledge past wrongs, but then sit down at a table together and say, what can we do going forward to make this world a better place? And so that's been my message all along. I think the world needs it today more than any other time because we're that divided. How can we work together, not knowing we don't agree on everything, but there's a way forward for all of us. And so that's my message, really, is I'm always going to advocate for love over hate. And so that's just who I am, and that's what I'll always try to advocate for. This world is worth protecting and saving, and the relationships that we have with people are worth nurturing and making sure that those in our trust and those people we come in contact with every day, we have a good experience with them. And that's the message I try to convey when we go to the massacre site throughout my life, really.
Well, and I think this is great because, you know, I do have some international listeners that won't be able to go here. And, you know, it is kind of, you don't see a lot of people here. But I remember you told us a story about a Chinese tour bus and a French couple. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, before COVID, the summer before COVID, I probably met 10 different Chinese tour buses. They usually do the Yellowstone and then come down through and they stop at Lava Hot Springs. Well, these tour buses heard about the massacre site, so they started stopping at this on their way down to Salt Lake City and then Zion's. And so, but being able to meet those Chinese who really embraced this Native American culture, it really resonates with them, and it's something that's really important to them. And so to be able to talk to them about what happened and then share our story of forgiveness to them, I think makes a big difference. And then I was happened to be at the site one day, met with IDOT, Idaho Department of Transportation officials, and there were five of them, and they were talking to me about how little, there were some maintenance issues up there. They put a few picnic tables made out of concrete. A couple of them had been smashed, and so they were saying, well, nobody comes here anyway. So their excuse for not maintaining it better. And we don't own it, so we can't do it.
And yeah, that's a state site or something,
yeah,
is that right?
It is a state. It was that excess land the state had that let us use it to tell our story. So this guy, they're going off on, nobody ever comes here anyway. And I said, oh, that's not true. I meet Chinese tour buses here, and I meet people from all over the world, frankly, on any given day. And they're going, yeah, yeah, they're being nice to me. But a car pulls up, and a couple gets out, and the guy, they're looking around, and they have a book in their hands. And they're looking around going, you know, they look lost. So I walked over and just said, can I help you? And they started speaking French to me. They didn't speak any English at all. And I thought, and he motions to this book he had in his hand. And it was a book. He was from Paris. He wrote this book about the Bear River Massacre. He'd heard about the massacre earlier in his childhood. And he wrote this book and he illustrated this book. And he was there to leave a copy of the book right there in the weeds, or he didn't know what else to do with it. He said, and the only reason I know this is because he's trying to speak to me in French, and the group had overheard. And one of the younger gentlemen that was in the group from IDOT walked over and he starts speaking to these people in French. And he said, I served my LDS mission to France. And then we have this wonderful conversation because they can tell us why they're there. They flew from Paris to the site to see the site. That was, wow, the only reason for their trip. And then, you know, we visited for more than an hour, and then they ended up leaving. And then they walked back over here and they go, well, don't say anything. We get it. People from all over the world come here to hear this story. And I said, absolutely. I could tell a story like this once a month on somebody that comes here. And there may be residents 10 miles away that have lived here their whole life and don't know anything about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, that's the gamut we have here. But yeah, my life is blessed every time I go up there with an encounter with somebody that's heard. And so I love to go up there and just share with people.
So this is the book.
Yeah.
That's a really nice book. I just figured, holy cow. Was that in there when he gave it to you?
Yeah, yeah.
So he knew you somehow.
Well, no, what the book he brought that day, he left with me, and I presented it to the tribal council. And he said, I promise you, I will sign a book to you, and I'll mail it to you.
Oh, so he mailed,
so he mailed me another book.
Oh, okay.
But that's what it looked like when he brought it.
Wow. That is way cool. This is amazing, and it's all in French.
Yeah, it's all in French. But he'd heard the story, and so he...
Wow.
You know, the fact that they'd spend all that money and come here and was just amazing to me. And it was such great timing because of you not being there saying nobody ever comes.
That's really amazing. Wow. Yeah. It's long. We haven't even...
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So...
Wow. Cool. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Darren Perry. He's the author of The Bear River Massacre. We're actually going to visit the massacre site in our next episode.
Just straight out in front of us is the killing field. That's where all the bodies lie still today. None of the bodies were buried in 1863. The ground was frozen solid. The bodies were left there to rot.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button, or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.